Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eyes Look at This Week in the Capitol. J.R., I'm going on a limb here. I see a potential transportation funding deal in that Walker said, I think we can free up some more money looking at general purpose revenue in the state budget and some other areas we think we can save on. And Speaker Voss, remember, he said, I think you quoted him saying the governor had a blind spot on transportation funding. That was then. This is now. I think we're on the cusp of a solution. I really believe that. Am I reading too much into this, my friend?
Well, I'm watching several things. Number one, Dale Kianga, Republican from Brookfield, from the Assembly, member of the Joint Finance Committee. He's been working on a package that is, from what I've been told, not just transportation, but also is going to have to touch some tax stuff as well. Remember, Speaker Voss and his leadership team said a couple months ago now, we are going to take up the governor up on his offer. We're going to find $300 million in tax cuts to pave the way for more money going to transportation. Dale was put in charge of that effort. Once his plan drops, I think that will really spur the conversation. I don't have final details of the entire thing, but you know, hear bits and pieces there, here and there, and I get the impression it's going to be aggressive. So we're watching for that. The second thing is, when I interviewed Alberta Darling last week, the co-chair of the Finance Committee from Senate, she said their caucus is working on its own finance transportation package. Now, what I pick up on that is they're looking more at the, how do we free up money from the general fund that go to the transportation fund? I always talk about these two checking accounts, right? General fund pays for Medicaid, schools, government operations,
K-12, all shared revenue,
sales tax, income tax,
prisons,
corporate tax, excess tax, transportation fund, their checking account, all from, you know, gas tax, registration fees, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Moving money from here over to here, how do you free it up? The problem is when you move money from here, you're taking money that could go to schools, to UW,
Medicaid. UW.
So it creates, it doesn't solve the problem long term, but it frees up money in the short term. So they're looking for areas to do that. And then finally, what will the governor accept? If they find a creative package on this, and I was told a couple weeks ago, don't just lock in to gas tax and transportation or registration fees.
Right.
Be open-minded about something unique, because remember the Bucks Arena, we all thought it was going to be, you know, the state giving over this income tax revenue to pay for these bonds. They found a different path. So might there be a different way that we're not anticipating? It's beyond just a simple sales or gas tax increase or a registration fee increase.
Okay, we both understand that the gas tax is not, read all the lips up there, going up. But this back and forth, this fudge area on the registration fee just intrigues me, because at one point Walker said, I don't know any legislators that are interested in raising the $75 you and I pay to register our vehicles. But I still wonder, and it's why I listed as undecided, whether that's going to be part of the assembly package. Now, I understand Koenig's got transportation plus tax reform, and Koenig is paired up with Senator Markline, so I assume it's going to be a Koenig-Markline moving money around.
With the registration fee, what's interesting is last week, a TV station caught Walker at one of his events, and they reported that he seemed open to registration fee increase. Then on Monday, he says, no, we're not going that direction. So 2 years ago, Governor Walker said a registration fee increase is a tax hike. I will not accept one. Now, you could throw out all kinds of what ifs, like what if about hybrids? They're not paying, or electric cars, they're not paying a gas tax or as much as they could because of the miles driven, because it's a hybrid. So might there be a new fee? All those what ifs out there, who knows?
Okay, but it's time for a little bit of a history lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Between 2011 and 2017, the general fund, the big checking account, propped up the transportation fund, $160 million in 11-13, $206 million in 13-15, $79.9 million, a total of $445.9 million, went from the general fund to the transportation fund. And I find this amazing, the general fund is guaranteeing, paying off bonding for highways of $695 million that was approved between 2009 and 17. So, but just one final point, between 2003 and 11, you know this number.
Yes.
Transportation fund to general fund, $1.4 billion, which got us the constitutional amendment, locking up the transportation fund. So we have some recent history of the general fund bailing out the transportation fund.
And last fiscal bureau memo, I remember reading about this, said that between the transfers and the bonding of the general fund, we've now matched what we took out of it in the transportation with the general fund back in the Dole administration.
Yep.
The caveat is the Republicans who keep harping this issue will say that, well, they put us in a hole that even though we put more money back in, we're still trying to dig out of that situation we were in back then. Of course, Governor Doyle and some of his defenders say, well, look, we bonded to cover that money we took out of it. So we still did projects. They didn't stop doing roads because of it, but they bonded, and we are now in a situation where 20-some cents of every dollar goes to pay off just interest on our bonds, and that is part of our long-term issue with transportation. Governor Walker is proposing, I believe, $500 million in new bonding in this biennium, which we'll talk about how low that is compared to past years. That is true. But on top of everything else, it's a continued drain of the money.
And it still takes the amount of transportation fee revenues, transportation tax collections, that have to go to pay the debt service, pay our checkbooks, our borrowing, our credit cards to 22% and 23%. Okay, well, do I hear you say we think we may have more on the Coinga Mark Line Transportation Plus package?
I caught Coinga after finance on Monday. He said he hoped to have it out in the next week or two. So stay tuned for that.
Okay, next subject. It was a deadline last week for our Attorney General and 12 other states to tell the Supreme Court, do not overturn the Court of Appeals decision. Oh, no, they want it overturned. Have I misspoke.
They want 300 panels, which is an overturn. Their argument is that you're opening up basically a Pandora's box.
Yes.
If you allow this, they called it dangerous in some of these filings. If you allow this to stand, what you're doing basically is taking the power to draw lines away from legislatures and putting it in the hands of the courts. Basically, even though it's, they still get the first crack over here, it'll always end up here. And the reasoning is that anytime you're going to set a standard of what's too partisan, because this is the whole issue with redistricting, we know you can't gerrymander a district for race to dilute the influence of minority voters. You cannot do that. There are other standards that we know the Supreme Court you cannot do, and they all relate to race. Those are clear in court decisions. What is not clear, nobody's ever drawn a line about, is one's it too partisan. Can you cross a line where a map is too partisan? This case could set that standard. What these filings are saying is if you set a standard, and they argue the standard that the court accepted in this case is not that clear, that it would still be a little blurry and cause some confusion, that if you accept this standard, every map that's ever done basically is threatened to be challenged and go to court, and then you end up with the courts basically taking that power away from lawmakers and interceding almost every time.
Okay, and I got it wrong. Our Attorney General and Attorney Generals of 12 other states are asking the Supreme Court to tell the Court of Appeals, you got it wrong in ordering the Wisconsin legislature to draw new boundaries by November 1. Okay, I just want to talk about the institute made by the brief filed by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. This court should acknowledge that there is no determinable legal standard by which a court can consistently and impartially determine which partisan reapportionment goes too far. That was the point you just made.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then Mr. Schimmel, just two sentences. Political impact is foreseeable in any apportionment plan, but there is no clear standard to distinguish permissible from impermissible partisan effects. Last sentence, the Court of Appeals ruling threatens to entangle every state in protected, politically motivated litigation. 12 other states filed amicus on this. Mm-hmm. This is a huge deal.
Yes, 12 states. Of those 12, all 12 attorneys general are Republicans. All but one represent a legislature controlled all by Republicans. But there are also Democrats in other states who've kind of raised some concerns about this. It is the most political thing you can do in the Capitol, legally, is draw the lines, because whoever's in power is going to draw these lines to their maximum benefit. What has changed between now and years past is they now have programs that are so good they can slice and dice every neighbor they want to to maximize their potential.
Right.
Republicans, here's the caveat, though. Republicans and the numbers they have in Wisconsin are not there because of the maps. The maps have contributed, but they have won districts that at the top of the ticket Democrats have taken. They've won them because they've had better resources, better candidates, better message. national environment. You can go on down the list. So yes, Democrats, you have a point that there are times when these maps don't match the outcome at the top of the ticket. But Republicans, you can't blame every single win they have on the maps.
And our last civil dialogue discussion with Barca and Voss. Voss looked at Barca and said there are 20 of the 99 assembly districts that are competitive. Hmm. Now, also, another thing. This was just the deadline for those that want the Supreme Court to overturn the Court of Appeals. We still haven't seen briefs yet from those who filed the original lawsuit. That's still to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the court hasn't said it's going to take it up or what it's going to do with it. So that's going to be a very much a watch decision. And then here's the thing. They're not making any moves that we can see, at least, to draw the lines. So if this becomes July, August, September, and there's no decision, what's going to happen then if they scramble to draw lines
and
if
it,
they have to?
And it's now a full Supreme Court with Mr. Justice Gorsuch.
But Republicans seem fairly confident in the end. They want to draw these lines and they're going to be fine. So that's the impression they're at least portraying in public so far.
Okay, new subject. I amazed pretty easily, JR, but I was surprised yesterday that Voss, Representative Voss, and Kramer, and Harsdorf, and I'm missing somebody, announced the Free Speech on Campus Act. Mm-hmm. Number one, excuse me, it would direct the Board of Regents to implement freedom of expression policy. It would create a disciplinary process for those disturbing or impeding free speech. And you could be expelled from a UW System campus if you did that. New board would consist of UW System officials and legislators who would review the cases annually. Legislators and academics? What type of, is this a censorship panel?
Well, that's a good question. Anytime you get into free
excuse
speech,
me.
In first minutes, it gets a little bit dicey. For example, as I read the bill, it talks about penalizing those who are basically boorish or who are you know, obnoxious. Well, how do you define that in law? How do you say you're too loud? What about the debate in the public square of one person yelling and the person yelling back? What's going to happen to that? Those are things that I can't answer. I'm not an attorney. I don't know. But it screams lawsuit. If they pass this law and put it into place, somebody's kicked off a campus, it screams lawsuit.
And, sorry, the lead assembly sponsor, Jesse Kramer, it's conservative voices on college campuses who feel that they are being suppressed and censored. And the Larry Dupuy of the ACLU, a heckler can be legally removed, but the extreme sanction of suspension or expulsion, could chill legitimate but pointed questions from the audience. Do you see this passing?
I have no idea.
Because I agree if it passes, we'll see you in court. But this is just...
It is. Part of it, though, is look at what's been happening on campuses where people can't come onto campus and speak without threat of violence.
Oh, like Coulter on Berkeley just this week?
So those are things that are kind of troubling for a lot of people that you're seeing, not just people who are trying to counter speech they don't like with better speech, but with, you know, physical contact. That's a little bit of an issue. And how do you fix that? That's kind of a dicey one to get into.
Well, but I tell you, the most incredible thing, the most intriguing thing for me is this creation of a board. Academics and legislators reviewing on a case-by-case basis these incidents that call into question freedom of speech.
Yeah. There's been such a close relationship lately between lawmakers and the faculty.
Oh, yeah, they are reading from different pages. Okay, explain to me how a surtax on 20% surtax on Canadian lumber and Wisconsin dairy farms gets into the mix this week, JR.
This is a president who talked tough on trade, who is basically carrying out that message. And it's been interesting. The Walker administration will tell you that President Trump has been very open, very willing partner on this dairy issue. This all begins because of some changes in Canadian policy. There's a producer saying, okay, or manufacturer saying, okay, we're not taking your dairy product anymore, Wisconsin dairy farmers. You're going to have to go somewhere else. So all of a sudden, these guys have all this dairy and no place to go with it. So there's a scramble to help people out, and President Trump gets wind of it. And all of a sudden, now you see this guy making threats about withdrawing from NAFTA, slapping on the tariff on Canadian soft wood, things like pine, which are used in building homes, and really kind of ramping up the rhetoric on trade. It's been fascinating to watch how this grew just from that one little thing about dairy farmers to being this kind of national discussion about NAFTA and whether we should stay in that trade agreement.
Well, and a TV station interviewed a Wausau Homes executive who said, this is going to raise the price of a new home mm-hmm. by $1,000 or more, this 20% tariff.
And they're timber producers in the United States going, hey, yeah, but you're going to buy our... I mean, there are winners and losers every time you have a trade discussion, right?
Right.
For Trump, this is all about message. He won as a champion of the forgotten guy, right? The little guy, the farmer. Interesting dynamic for somebody who is a Manhattanite billionaire, that he is the champion of the middle class. But he won in that rhetoric, and now he's kind of making good on that promise in some ways by delivering a trade fight. I mean, other presidents, somebody told me this week, would have been much more cautious in how they approached this. Not President Trump. And I read a story yesterday or last night saying that he went in thinking, I'm going to blow up NAFTA and withdraw from it. And people were telling him, talking him off, saying, no, look what would happen if you did that. Who would be hurt? Well, Trump states, people in dairy producer states, I mean, all these places that trade with Canada and Mexico, they would be hurt. Said, okay, I'll back off. But then he got calls with the Canadian and Mexican leaders saying, let's renegotiate a better deal. Now,
right. Can
he get one? We'll see. Has anything actually happened for the dairy producers yet? Not really. They've had to scramble and find other manufacturers to go to. We've had the governor talking about issues or efforts to help them out. So, but there's not like a resolving of this issue yet. But it is the rhetoric. It's the political theater that plays out for Trump that's kind of interesting.
Okay. And while we're talking about the governor, he was asked about the president's first 100 days. And he was, how would you put it? Pretty noncommittal, with the exception of he liked what he did with the Canadian lumber in response to the problem with Wisconsin dairy farms. So how would you characterize Governor Walker's, when he was asked to describe President Trump's 100 days?
A little bit noncommittal, but in a nice way. How's that?
Nicely noncommittal.
Yes. So, I mean, he's not going to criticize the president, who's obviously had some ups and downs in the first 100 days. There's a lot of talk about accomplishments, but not many. Same time, conservatives are really happy about the Supreme Court, you know, having another conservative member who's in his, late 40s, who'll be there for 3+ decades, barring anything unforeseen. They're happy with the executive orders that have rescinded. Basically, a lot of these things have rescinded Obama executive orders. That's what the net effect has been. They're happy about the message at times. But in terms of, the health care vote, hasn't happened yet. Showdown about funding government, that their temporary reprieve approved today by both houses, I believe.
7 days. 7 days to work out a funding deal for our government.
This function isn't fixed yet. And there are all kinds of other things that are warning signs for Trump people about his approval numbers. But Supreme Court, big win. So you kind of, if you're a conservative, you kind of hang your head on that. We got to see the Supreme Court.
Well, before I talk about the dairy farmer that Wisconsin I interviewed this Monday, let me ask you this: Speaker Paul Ryan, was forced to announce we're not going to have another vote on the new health care plan. So how do you see Ryan here juggling a tax plan that we don't have the details of, a government shutdown, and a health care bill that ain't going to the floor this weekend?
On the tax piece, there was a story this week about how Ryan got rolled by the president, essentially, because Paul Ryan has made his entire career basically in overhauling the United States tax code.
Is there a border adjustment tax in the Trump plan?
No.
No.
So in Trump, in some ways, I mean, the plans, you know, the Trump plan, the outline, has a lot in common with the House Republican outline. But the key piece is the border tax. That's not there. So he moved beyond that rhetoric or that piece to try and get something going. He's very hung up, it seems like, on the 100-day mark. No, he says he's not. It's a phony deadline.
He called it ridiculous.
He's very
hung
up. And
then he did all these interviews on the 100 days.
So there's that. Healthcare, we thought was dead, a month ago. It's got new life, but does it? If it does get out of the House, does it have life in the Senate? God only knows at this point what's going with that. So there's that going on. The government shutdown. I mean, what's interesting is the president this week one day went on Twitter to say it's all Democrats' fault if the government shuts down.
Right.
But Republicans run everything. They have both houses. They have the White House. Why is it Democrats' fault if you guys can't fund government to keep it alive? And that's part of the problem that Ryan's talked about, is going from the party of opposition to the party of governing. They have to now produce results to show that, hey, we're grown-ups, we can do more than just complain about the President Obama.
Okay, now I want you to hear about a dairy farmer. I am the grandson of a dairy farmer. And so I had great fun going into the milking barn of Steve and Dory Lichty in Beaver Dam on Monday to get their personal, they didn't know on Monday. So we were there 1 week before they were going to lose a buyer for their milk. and it's a very emotional piece. It's up on wisi.org. And just yesterday, they got a six-month contract with Dairy Farm, the Green Bay outfit, Dairy Farmers of America.
Okay.
So that's a happy story. Congratulations, Steve and Dory. Hope it works out for you. So most of the farmers affected by the grasslands cutoff have now found buyers.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, okay. So lumber and dairy farmers, that's great. Now let's fast forward. Joint finance begins 2 o'clock on Monday?
Yep.
Okay, I'm gonna talk about the process, but now I have the numbers from the six public hearings. 1,088 people registered to speak, 385 registered but didn't speak. You and I have covered a lot of these outstate public hearings. Do they, are they pretty effective in terms of legislators hearing from real people, or are they just kind of a PR thing?
Sometimes. Last budget, clearly the IRS testimony from the folks who have disabilities but are able to stay in their own homes because of this program.
Yes.
It is very expensive per person, but it makes a huge impact on their lives. Their testimony definitely changed the minds of the committee or swayed the committee on what it was going to do with the family care program, which is kind of the umbrella. That's an example of where it had an impact. Here, in talking to some folks, I didn't see a moment like that in this budget. It seemed like there was, you know, education was a big piece of the discussion. Some people saying yay, some saying it's still not enough. And I had one Republican tell me, you know, we're never going to get credit for anything we do with education because of what happened the first couple of budgets and with Act 10.
Yeah.
There are some administrators who will never let us get past that. That said, the number looks like it's pretty good shape. The $649 million that Governor Walker wants to do, that I think is going to survive. Now, they may divvy it up in different ways, but I think they're going to really try to keep that number as much as they can.
Some together. Of that is tied to their savings with the self-insurance, which ain't going to happen.
No. And what they can do is they could, for example, if you start getting in the weeds of where the pots of money, you could, $35 million for a 5-cent tuition tax cut, you could grab that money and say no tuition tax cut, or tuition cut, I'm sorry, and then use that $35 million to pay for raises for your system employees, which is part of the self-insurance money would go toward that. You can go to state employees and say, okay, we're not going to put you on self-insurance. We're going to raise your deductible, your copay, things like that. That can find some savings that offset not doing self-insurance. So there are ways to find money in this budget. Even though, you know, Governor Walker put it all kinds of places, there's $20 million here that go to the rainy day fund. There's that $35 million for the tuition. There's all kinds of pots of money to find. It's, can you find the political will to move it around and take the hit from the interest groups over taking away what could be something they like?
What should Wisconsin residents who want to try to follow the joint finance process, what should they be looking for? You're going to be tweeting continually of the decisions. Wisconsin is going to be carrying all of the joint finance deliberations. What things should they be looking for? It's kind of a kabuki dance, isn't it?
Monday is going to be very much light lifting. They're taking low-hanging fruit, knocking out a few things. Governor Walker proposed like the Judicial Commission, Judicial Council. One oversees discipline for judges. One makes recommendations about policy for the courts, essentially.
Yeah.
He wanted to do away with the one that does the recommendations on policy and take the one about discipline, put it on the Supreme Court.
Which is a big deal. Let's take away the agency that now investigates potential misconduct and wrongdoing by judges and prosecutes it, although the court is the ones who decide.
And put it under their purview. Proposed it 2 years ago. They knocked it out. I don't think it's going to go very far this time either.
I think they're going to knock it out again.
Yeah. So low-hanging fruit on Monday. What to watch for? The first couple of weeks, they're going to do the easy stuff. Now, it doesn't mean that they're not going to do any changes, but they'll do things that are not really controversial. What they're looking for? One, this transportation package. How's that discussion progress? I would not be surprised if they wait till the end, like they always do, on transportation, UW system, K-12. Other thing to watch for, every May in a budget process, the Fiscal Bureau, which is the nonpartisan budget arm of the legislature, does the projections. They will look at the numbers and revenue and say, okay, do we need to adjust our revenue projections?
Here's
up
what
or down.
You have to spend, Joint Finance Committee.
Every 2 years when this happens, lawmakers keep their fingers crossed, please, Bob Lang, find more money.
Yes.
That doesn't always happen. It often does, but not always. What's interesting is our corporate tax collections are still soft. You have to watch those. We just had growth, I saw this morning, of 0.7%, 0.3%, whatever it was, slowest in the last 3 years nationally.
Okay.
So are things going to slow down? We're expecting the repeal of the Affordable Care Act. We're expecting a tax package from Republican Congress. If they don't deliver, there are all kinds of uncertainty right now. So, bottom line is, does fiscal bureau find more money or less money? Finds more money, it's easier to move money around to do more transportation stuff. If it finds less money, that means we got to cut something.
That makes it more more interesting.
Which is why these big ticket items, the UW, K-12, they wait till the end because that's where the most money is. Those things I'm watching for.
But let's set the table. These 16 members of the Joint Finance Committee, they're appointed by their leaders, the Speaker in the Assembly, the Majority Leader in the Senate, and it's 12-4 because Republicans control, 12 Republicans and 4 Democrats. So there's going to be, again, a lot of 12-4 votes. So, and this, you look for Joint Finance to end, here's a prediction. June 15.
They right now have days scheduled through June 8th, and then until the budget's done, as the last line of their schedule. If they get done by the end of June, they will be happy, because if they're done by the end of June, that means they could pass the bill right around the end of the fiscal year, just time for Walker to sign it, just days after. Now, we're different from the feds. If we go beyond June 30th, we continue as is.
There's no shutdown.
So nothing really changes. There's not like a hard, fast deadline.
Right.
But it's more embarrassing if you are one party control of both houses in the governor's office, you can't get your stuff done before the fiscal year ends. So there's always a July 4th parade weekend.
And there's just one more thing to note about Joint Finance, because they're working from the governor's budget. There's 16 members. It takes 9 to add, delete, or change anything in the governor's budget, with one exception,
transportation.
Transportation budget. Okay, stock picks.
So the RAINS Act, this is basically what
my eyes are glazing over. What is RAINS?
This is interesting. This is insider baseball, but the RAINS Act is about adding a new layer of scrutiny to the administrative rules process, which actually is very important. When we pass a law in Wisconsin, it doesn't tell you all the time how to do everything to implement it. So agencies have this responsibility to draw up, well, how is it actually going to work?
Right.
The rules process has always irritated Republicans because they feel like these agencies, they call them the bureaucrats, get in things and muck things up. Even though we've had Republican control for 6 solid years, well, except for that brief moment with the recalls, we've had 6 years of Republican control when it's mattered. They've been in charge of everything. It's been Governor Walker's agencies. There's still this desire to change how the rules are drawn up. This would say, okay, if there's a rule that has a $10 million impact over a 2-year period.
$10 million?
Mm-hmm.
More than?
Yes, it adds new layers of what has to be done.
Okay.
This bogged down last session, the Senate. It got, because of concerns by Republicans there, earlier Scott Fitzgerald said we're not quite there yet. We got a substitute amendment this week that Fitzgerald helped negotiate. That means it's going to fly through. It's going to go to the floor of the Senate this month. It's going to the Assembly Committee next week. It's going to get done. What this means for people is that it's really about the legislature and the balancing act between lawmakers and the governor and who has the power when it comes to drawing up rules. There's a provision in here that if there's a rule that lawmakers don't like, they could permanently enjoin it.
One freshman legislator who's been in the Capitol 3 months could stop an agency rule?
Well, no. Joint Committee for Review of Administrative Rules, this joint committee,
okay,
they have the power, or would have the power, to enjoin a rule. Right now, if you want to do that, you have to have the committee pass or introduce a bill in both houses. Bill has to become law. Well, if you're a legislature fighting a governor about a rule, you have to get him to sign the bill, right? This will allow JCRAR to permanently join the rule without going through the bill process. Gives him more power in the administrative rules process, which I know is glazing your eyes over, but this is big stuff in the inside the building, how things work. This is an important development in that bill.
Okay, now let's come out of the weeds. Mixed.
So Donald Trump. So the rhetoric is great on the dairy stuff, on, you know, fighting for trade. His numbers aren't that great, though. We saw another poll out this week. It's a Republican firm out east that looked at 4 states, Wisconsin, Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania. They call it Trump country. In 2 of those 4 states, President Trump is still in positive territory. And one, he's even. Wisconsin, he's underwater. 40% favorable rating, 40% unfavorable rating. So the context is, all this stuff he's doing on trade, he needs these wins in Wisconsin to pull these numbers up. Why? He needs Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania to hold for him. If he loses those three states in 2020, it's over, unless he can find new states. I mean, Minnesota was close. You know, the other states were close. But barring finding new states, he needs those three to stay. Wisconsin is a key state for his reelection prospects. He needs these moves that appeal those Trump voters in western Wisconsin and northern Wisconsin. He needs those things to get those numbers up. 40% is a problem for anybody. Now, Trump is unique because he's one of 47.22%, right?
Right.
That's still 7 points down, and it reaffirms the Marquette poll from a month ago. He's 41-47. He's not making much progress. Maybe this whole episode will bump him up a little bit.
This is the Donald Trump that agrees with Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin on Buy America.
Ooh,
just a footnote.
Yes, she is really hitting that hard. The dairy stuff, and these are things that Tammy Baldwin is smartly trying to appeal to those voters that they voted for Obama and voted for Trump. They get them back for her side in 2018 because she needs them.
Okay, almost out of time. Falling.
David Clark, this inquest and the jail death has not been good. The question with Clark is, this guy has not been afraid to mix up with anybody and to throw punches back, but at one point do you get so much baggage that you are not somebody that people want anymore? And the people I'm talking about, Donald Trump. We're 3 months into his presidency and he's still not in Washington, D.C. We all assume he's getting a job in the administration. It hasn't happened yet. Now, granted, they've had issues filling jobs out in D.C. with the Trump administration, but what's going to go on with Derek Clark? What's his future? I don't think he'd win re-election right now with this kind of stuff going on. Maybe he could, but it'd be very difficult in talking to some people, but the hits are starting to add up for him. It's not that great a thing to have.
That testimony where an inmate in the jail, which, excuse me, is run by the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Department, was denied water for 7 days, and oops, some videotapes just didn't happen to make it.
So the water was shut off because he was flooding his cell. What I haven't seen yet in the inquest is, was he offered bottled water? How did that work? Now, he had undiagnosed bipolar disorder, which from the testimony I've read, rendered him incapable of seeking aid. But so we haven't got everything out yet from this inquest, but these hits are not good for him the way they're coming out.
I agree. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for April 28.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.